Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Wave Podcast. We are here to talk to you guys today about the biggest movie in the world. It is Deadpool and Wolverine. I am one of your hosts. My name is Darian Scalamoni. I am joined this time by Megan Krantz.
Hey, everybody.
As well as Michael Peniston.
Hello, everyone.
We will be your Marvel guides through this wonderful movie, and we're going to start with our non-spoiler thoughts for all our non-spoiler people who haven't had a chance to see this film yet. So we're going to do broad strokes. It is hard because there's a lot of spoilery details that add to this movie, but we're going to do our best and we're going to talk to you guys for just a few minutes about our broad non-spoiler thoughts. So Megan, let's start with you. What were your thoughts about Deadpool and Wolverine?
I think Deadpool and Wolverine was a very, very great time. And I feel like being that we finally have Wolverine and Deadpool and all these new characters in the MCU, I feel like the creators of this film were just like, we're just going to have fun. And I'm pretty sure they did. And I think that the audiences are as well. So I felt like, I mean, the whole time I was smiling. And I wouldn't say this is a spoiler, but Deadpool dancing to NSYNC, like in the opening, it literally is like ingrained in my brain. And every time I see it online, I just never skip it. I just watch it all the way through every time. And I just have a crush on Deadpool now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just I really had a lot of fun. I would say, like, we were talking about this a little bit before we started filming, but my like personal Marvel watching experience and everything like that, I would consider myself more of a casual Marvel fan, being is that I am a viewer of the MCU films thus far and really into them thus far. I was born into a family with everyone always watching Marvel, and I would go to the theaters and I'd watch Marvel movies, but for a while I just didn't care really. Mm-hmm. But after Civil War and after Spider-Man was in the MCU, I cared. And I still care. I started caring a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will bring him up later as well. But yeah, I had a great time. I think I'm definitely going to be watching the X-Men films after this, because I think some of the Wolverine excitement and jokes were like a little lost on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not as familiar with the X-Men and everyone like that. So all those characters are going to be yet to be explored by me, but I'm mm-hmm. definitely intending on doing that. So,
awesome. Yeah, Michael, what about you? First thoughts?
I definitely agree. I feel like coming off of a very bad Marvel run, unfortunately, this was exactly what we needed. It mm-hmm. was all the way around hilarious. I feel like it was Deadpool just like at his prime form and better, just because now we do have just like all of the MCU sort of tidbits and analogies and everything, and the cameos and everything. It was just such, like you said, it was a really, really, really fun time. What I loved was that they were able to kind of bring in a lot of MCU little Easter eggs and nods, while also still like bringing in those Fox nods and, you know, paying a lot of tribute and bringing in the nostalgia of that side of things, while also continuing the Deadpool story, which I think having to do all three could have gotten really very tricky. And I think they did it very well. And that's just very just vague sort of overview.
Yeah. Again, it's tough to talk about this movie without revealing some of the spoilery details, but wrapping up our non-spoiler thoughts, just echoing what both of you guys said, this movie was a boatload of fun. Like, there is so much entertainment value in this film, and there has been a lot in the previous two Deadpool films as well. If you're a fan of the Deadpool movies, first and foremost, like, you're gonna love this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the humor is on another level. I've been saying this the last couple days for people who haven't seen it or they were curious about my thoughts. It's a great MCU movie, but above all else, I think it's one of the funniest movies I've seen in probably the last 10 years. Like, and there's references to a lot of different things. There's references to like Marvel, there's references to Fox, there's references to superhero movies in general, the problems with the MCU that you alluded to, Michael. There's so much in here that is so direct and so meta and so Deadpool that if you're a fan of the Deadpool movies, there's no doubt in my mind you're going to love this film. So we all highly recommend it. You guys should definitely go and check out Deadpool and Wolverine in theaters if you haven't already. It's already made like $440 million worldwide, which is insane to think about. And it's, I think it's going to be a billion-dollar movie. It's going to be one of the biggest movies of the year, one of the biggest movies for the MCU. It had the sixth biggest opening in cinema history. So it's done great. It's fantastic. It's doing amazing things. And all you guys that are listening, if you guys haven't seen the movie yet, I suggest you guys turn this off and come back and return to it, our review, for our spoiler details, because right now we're going to dive deep into a spoiler-heavy discussion of Deadpool and Wolverine. So once again, you guys have been warned, but I think I can speak for me, Megan, and Michael, that you should go and check out this movie in theaters right now. We're going to jump into spoilers in 3, 2, 1. Okay, here we
Let's
are.
Let's go.
Finally,
there's so much.
Can breathe.
There's so much to talk about. I want to start with just the simple IMDb synopsis of what this film is.
Okay.
Because I think it's funny how it's explained, but it is true. The movie is described as Deadpool is offered a place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe by the Time Variance Authority, but instead recruits a variant of Wolverine to save his universe from extinction. That is true. That is what the film is. In and of itself, and there's so many references to so much of what is happening currently in the MCU, but even more so things that have previously happened in Marvel films before it. And Michael's word of nostalgia, I thought, was the perfect way to describe it. So now, broad spoilery thoughts. I want to go the opposite way. So Michael, we'll start with you. You can be as spoiler heavy as possible, but again, this is just broad thoughts before we dive into specific sequences. What were your thoughts on Deadpool and Wolverine, buddy?
Oh, all right. Wow. Okay. It's like a different Michael coming into this now.
Yeah.
Right? No. So I am so, so happy with how this film turned out. I have always loved the Deadpool movies for just not only what they stood on, but just the not being afraid to break the comedic barrier and like not being afraid to cross any line. And as being able to just go as far as they want to go, you know? And so knowing that now we had the midst of Marvel content in the midst of this, I knew that there was just like no stopping what could what potentially come. Going right into the spoilers of it all, the first thing I got to bring up is the cameos, just because it was what made this movie for sure. They did just that as far as highlighting both Fox and the MCU and so many Easter eggs and tidbits. Having the return of the Human Torch was great. The thing with these movies that makes them so standoffish from every other film or any other comedy film at that point is just the way that they can bring in items like this and then throw him off so fast, or like, I don't know. It's just like having like Human Torch come in the way he did, and to present him like Captain America was a genius move in my boat. For anybody who knows Cap as Cap, or anybody who knows him as the Human Torch, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like things like that, where it's like you could work the best of both worlds, like, and do it so perfectly. And that's just one example of it. Like, there were so many. We're going to talk about cameos a lot, so I'm sure I don't have to really focus on that right now. But they were all great. And then aside from that, just the relationship between Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman is just so, so nice to see on screen, the way that they're like going at it. I feel like the fight scenes in this movie were like beautiful. To see Wolverine on all fours crawling around, like, something like that is just so small and beautiful. But like, I feel like they nailed all of those moments. And then you also got some really like kind of heavy moments, like dialogue moments in the midst of the comedy as well. Like, there was like this moment where like Wolverine just kind of, when he realized that like everything he was doing was potentially for nothing, there was a moment in the car where he just like tore Deadpool apart. And it was genuinely like I would compare some of that acting to Hugh Jackman's acting in like Prisoners. Like, it was like, it was really good for Marvel. So I don't know, like, they just, from the comedy to the heart of it all, this movie was fantastic to me.
Megan, what about you?
Those are some great thoughts. Totally agree with that. I think what is so awesome about this film, it's just such a breath of fresh air, because it's finally a rated R like Marvel film. And Deadpool needs a mature rated movie. Like, he couldn't, like, it wasn't going to be possible without it. It wouldn't have been the same Deadpool that we all know and love. So I think that that, just playing off of that, all the fourth wall breaking and all of the jokes and everything were really, really entertaining. So, and that's just what is so, like, charming about Deadpool. So I'm really pleased that they went with that and they just were like, all right, this is what we can finally do. And we don't really get to forget that that's what we're watching either, because Deadpool's always like saying like, ah, so I love how it opens. He just tells everyone straight up like, well, you know, if you're first watching this now, like, just want to let you know that you're joining the MCU at kind of a low point. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Like, he just says it how it is as soon as we start. And I think for me, that was, I knew exactly what I was watching as soon as he said that. But, you know, and yeah, as soon as he starts to make all of these, you know, jokes about MCU and Marvel and the multiverse and how, like, convoluted that is, it's like, yeah, like, we know what we're here for. And he's, like, here with us. He's on the adventure, you know. He's just like, okay, I'm in the MCU now and things are pretty wild and crazy. But, you know, so I found that to be, yeah, definitely, like, it really stands out. Like, Deadpool stands out. Wolverine stands out. Just the entire tone of this film really was just like, it was just different. So I feel like, and the fact that it was actually violent, like Wolverine and Deadpool fight and they can actually tear each other apart, kill each other so many times, and they just regenerate and they're fine. And that's like what is just funny about it. And I, like, a few times I was like genuinely like, damn, like that was some real, like, that was kind of, that's kind of nasty, like,
yeah, yeah,
you know, and that felt like true. Okay, this is the real, you know, Deadpool Wolverine nature. Like, this is what we came for. This is what we got. They were really trying to give the fans like what they needed, and I think this is a great like franchise debut almost for the two of them. Like we made it. Now we're here.
Yeah.
One really big cameo for me was Happy Hogan and Deadpool speaking to him and wanting to be an Avenger.
Yes.
And I think you know what I'm going to say. But I don't know if I should get into it now or not. But the picture frame on the desk, it's a picture of Tony and Peter, but it's kind of obstructed because the Iron Man mask is covering Peter in that picture with Tony, so we can only see Tony, but we kind of see part of like Peter in it.
You see his arm, yeah.
Yeah, and that broke me. I was like, I like jolted. When I saw that, I was just like, whoa, wait, like, what? And it didn't really hit me until later, until why they did that. Because Peter's been erased from every possible universe.
It's interesting that you say that that's the reason they showed that, because I don't know if that's necessarily the complete reason why they didn't show it. It's Peter? Funny, yeah, it's funny. This I have to give credit to Screen Crush on YouTube, because they're the one that pointed this out. So Tom Holland has a certain deal, obviously, because it's a Sony ran movie. This is a little meta for some people, but because he has a limit on his contract of how many times he can be on a screen of a Marvel movie, they purposely blocked out Tom Holland's face so that it wouldn't count contractually as an appearance in the MCU.
Are you serious?
I swear.
Because that's what
Now, your idea makes a lot more sense for the MCU, and it's so funny you had an emotional reaction to it.
Well, because that's what I thought originally. Regardless, I was still frustrated because I couldn't see Tom Holland's face.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just like, are you kidding? But then I started to think about it more, and I was like, okay, if he... What? Like, yeah, he was erased from all timelines. It would make sense, right? If he, you know, they did that.
Well, this was also, so you're talking about the current state of the MCU and where Peter is right now?
Yeah.
Well, that sequence takes place in 2018.
I guess you're right.
So it's a past thing. So even your theory, though it is, and I'm so sorry you got such an emotional reaction from it, it is not real. That is not the real reason that happened.
Oh, okay.
Moving on from that. No. But no, I agree with what both of you guys are saying. I want to say that the big thing for me is that within this movie, there's so much that needs to be balanced in the right way, especially coming off of the fact that, like Michael alluded to, like, we're on a not so great run in the MCU right now. And I love, Megan, how you talked about the tone is established as soon as this movie opens. And the opening credit sequence to Bye 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 by NSYNC is one of, already etched in my mind, is one of the greatest opening credit sequences in the history of movies.
Yes.
But the big thing for me is it was a test, right? It was a test to see that a rated R version of a beloved character that has worked outside of Disney in the MCU was going to work in this universe. And he comes in and they do it in a really good way where it's basically a giant aside to the MCU, though there are a lot of MCU references and it's so much fourth wall breaking to the audience. It doesn't have a real implication on the MCU. But what you brought up in the scene with Happy is that he's now interacting with MCU characters and we're seeing what that could look like a little bit. And it is funny because Deadpool doesn't have a single swear in that scene with Happy. So it is interesting to see how that could be a little bit of a preview for what we might have to see if Deadpool is in a PG-13 environment. And maybe they do they do bleeps. I don't know how they're going to, because that's like coming off of this movie. That's the biggest question for me. Like, it's just how are we going to see Deadpool interact with these heroes in a PG-13 setting? Because everybody's going to want to see Deadpool team up with the Avengers. Everyone's going to want to see Deadpool and whatever implication there's going to be for him going forward with the multiverse and Secret Wars and things like that. But talking about this movie in general, the other part you brought up, Michael, that I think is the biggest thing is the chemistry between the two leads. Is so obviously palpable and it's so unbelievably successful. Like, and they came together in 2009 for X-Men Origins Wolverine, and they've been wanting to work together ever since again in the, as these characters, and the MCU gave them that opportunity. And the cameos, like you talked about with Chris Evans returning as Human Torch. And I do love the same way, like the way they introduced him, you even get twinges of the Captain America theme when they show the hooded Chris Evans in the score. And I'm like, this is so great. And Deadpool's like, oh my God, it's Captain America. It's like the greatest thing ever. And there's a lot more cameos, like I said, we'll get to. But I do want to transition to a question for both of you guys. And this is not a con, but it's something that I am curious because Megan comes from a perspective of having seen none of the X-Men movies. Michael has seen at least majority of the X-Men movies, like myself. Is this movie too reliant on what has come before it for it to be an enjoyable experience for people that might not have that background? And Megan, I want to start with you because you don't have that background. So what do you think about maybe missing some of those references or not understanding some of the significant cameos? Like in particular, we talked off camera in the beginning, but like Channing Tatum comes in as Gambit in this film and you have no frame of reference of why that is a major impact in the movie. You know what I mean? So what are your thoughts on is it too meta for its own good?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that is my biggest gripe with this film, really. I thought that exact thing. I was like, I feel like we're just being reminded of not even what had been going on, I guess, with all the X-Men films and all those characters and all their stories and backgrounds and everything like that, but also just with the MCU. I feel like nothing was really added to the MCU storyline or tied in very much. There was cameos, but there was no progression with any of the stories. There was no leads to any stories. It just kind of felt like more of a setup. So like, okay, now these characters can be in the MCU, but I you know, especially with the multiverse and just how like everything was just kind of constructed in such a way where, you know, the fourth wall breaking with Deadpool's character and finding Wolverine in every single universe and trying to find the right Wolverine, like the multiverse and all the fourth wall breaking and everything, I feel like those were just like plot devices really just to like transition them into the MCU. It's somehow like they just kind of use that to be like, okay, here's how we're gonna, you know, get them in there, how to work them in narratively. And it was just very obvious or felt very blatant. Like it didn't feel as though like something really happened where Deadpool and Wolverine naturally came into the same environment. It was very much so like everything with the TVA. The TVA really just decided this. Like that's where it loses me a little bit too, because the TVA makes this decision like, oh, you need to do this in order to find your place in the MCU. Deadpool just feels lost in life and blah blah blah. You know, so it's kind of, so like that to me feels a little bit like of a weak way of getting things going and start. I mean, I think they make up for it with just how entertaining and great all the action is and everything like that. But I think a real like storyline perspective, yeah, like to even introduce or like have all that, like the X-Men characters, like they have Blade and Elektra. For me, I didn't really feel that much like excitement. I was just kind of like, oh, you know, these are the X-Men. That's cool. I will say Blade's entrance was pretty badass. The way he walked in slow motion and the song and everything was like,
which is funny that you're even saying this. So like, this is just also for frame of reference too. And it's not your fault because you haven't seen it in the movies.
Right.
Blade and Elektra are not X-Men. they're entirely different Marvel characters.
So what are they doing?
They were also in previous, and Michael, I'll get your take on this in a second, just explaining for Megan. Mm-hmm. But Blade was the first ever Marvel movie in the late 90s. He's another Marvel character. Mm-hmm. He's a vampire hunter. And then Elektra is the love interest of Daredevil. So not X-Men whatsoever. Yeah. They're just a part of this
universe,
this old Fox team, because they were in Fox licensed Marvel movies before Disney had the rights to these characters.
Okay.
So that's another thing. So it's a Fox, but that's what I'm saying. It could even be confusing for somebody who has no frame of reference for it.
There you have it.
Yeah. Michael,
casual fan here.
Exactly. Yeah. Michael, you come from the perspective of having seen at least some of the movies previously. What do you think about the question I just asked about, is it too meta for its own good?
I definitely agree with a lot of what you said. I feel like, not that it's a gripe, I can see how it can be a gripe for somebody that doesn't have that knowledge, that background knowledge, but this movie is very meta. It is very, very, very meta. This is a movie that was made for the fans, and it is not only that, this is like event, this is honestly, it should be kind of treated like Fox's Endgame, if that made sense, to a degree. Like, it's like a send-off, essentially, for all of these characters, and it is a continuation. And I can admit that it's sometimes the story does get a little bit, like...
muddled?
Yes, muddled throughout the midst of all of that. But at the same time, I feel like something like this was kind of needed. It's the same way that... Actually, I can't compare this to Far From Home, just because it did.
No Way Home, you mean?
No Way Home. No Way Home, just because it did kind of push Peter's story, obviously, while still kind of bringing in the nostalgia element of it all. This film, for sure, you needed to have watched not only X-Men films, but like you said, like the Blade film, Daredevil in the past. You needed to have watched all of the Daredevil movies to know like a little bit of why he's where he's at right now, and like why he's even able to time travel in the beginning of the film, because that's like something that they just throw in the end of Deadpool 2. And then like even the MCU, like there's so many like be the void in itself and Goliath, like you kind of needed to have watched Loki to have an idea of that, you know. And he even makes one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie, like when they bring up Goliath's name, he's like, oh, you mean Goliath from Loki season 1 episode 5. It's just like they play into it to a degree of like how much you kind of need to like watch. So I definitely, in having watched a lot of that, I could say that it helped a lot. But not only that, they even just played into fan service things that like somebody who hasn't seen it, like who has seen stuff, might not have realized. So like the whole Gambit thing, like that was never like they announced it, but it was never like a
it was never a movie.
Yeah.
So like Channing Tatum, in the real scheme of live action X-Men, never played the character of Gambit, but it was announced that they were going to make a movie. And Channing Tatum was going to play the character, and it never came to fruition.
And he was attached to it as early as 2010, I think.
Yes, he was supposed to play the character for like an 8-year stretch, and it never winded up happening.
Yeah. Huh. So that's why, like, that's why it was such like more of a nod to it, because it was like for the fans who knew of like, oh, okay, we've been waiting for like, we know Channing Tatum's going to kill this project, and we just never got it.
And then there's that other layer of that character, which again, we can get into the details of it and the minutia when we get to it, but it's like, they made his character have such a ridiculous accent because no one has ever seen that portrayal by that actor ever on screen. And Deadpool makes so many jokes like, oh my God, what is coming out of your mouth right now? I don't even understand what you're saying, because nobody ever saw Channing Tatum play Gambit ever. So it was a first for everybody, including Deadpool. So there's so many references and little details that are like so specific that if you don't know these things, it's very hard to understand all the jokes. Like, a lot of the jokes might not hit same way in theaters for some people than they might hit for the people that are completely aware of what the universe is trying to tell us in this movie.
There's one joke that I remembered, like, really after the fact that really, I feel like, hits the nail on the head with this whole part of this discussion. When Blade first came out and, like, they had, like, him and Deadpool had, like, a little dialogue. And he's like, I thought you were retired. And he's like, I'm not gonna say the word, which is a this is a family show. But like he repeated him and thought he said the wrong word. And then like I forget what happened, but Blade basically just goes like, "I don't like you," and Deadpool goes, "You never have," and it gets so like slipped under the mat, but it's because Ryan Reynolds was in Blade.
And you know, and there was a huge out. There was a huge news story about how Wesley Snipes did not like Ryan Reynolds after that movie.
You know what I'm saying? So there's so much minor detail that makes up this that they just played into.
There's another one in that scene where they talk about he goes, "Daredevil's here," and then they go, "No, he passed away. Like he's gone." And then he goes, "Oh my god!" And then they cut back to Elektra, and she goes, "Eh, it's okay." And it's because Jennifer Garner plays Elektra and used to be married to Ben Affleck, who played Daredevil in the beginning. This is, see, I'm blowing your mind right now. Like, so much. Like, there's so many references. Cut to Meg. Yeah, very good. I was like, you need to see a reaction, but it's true. That's... It's like, there's so much in just one sequence in the film alone that is reliant on, for the getting the most out of the effect, this movie is pure fan service. And No Way Home, like you said, at least expands upon the story in the MCU.
Yes, yeah.
This film does not do that. And this film doesn't even actually expand upon Deadpool necessarily.
Mm-mm.
Because at the end of Deadpool 2, he's a part of the X-Force and the X-Force doesn't exist in this movie. They make a joke about that too, about how Cable didn't do well with test audiences. Like there's just, there's so much to that. So that's why I was curious on getting both perspectives because like you still had a great time with this movie, but there's so you could have had maybe an even better time if you understood all of these references. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be a complicated thing for this movie going forward. And I'm definitely curious on where as an architectural sort of vision for the MCU going forward, like are we going in a direction where we're just going to cater to diehards? Because that's a hard thing, you know, like you got to still get more people in the audience. And like I said, my cousin is very excited to see this movie because he loved the first two Deadpool movies. And I said to him straight up on the phone, I go, there's going to be a lot of things you don't really get. And I hope you still enjoy it as much as I did. But there's a chance that he might not like it as much as I do because you call yourself a casual Marvel fan. He's probably seen like maybe four Marvel projects.
Even more casual.
So like it's not something he looks forward to necessarily. He likes some movies he hasn't liked, so it's like where do you go from there? So I don't know, there's a lot in this movie that it doesn't appeal to everybody or it doesn't cater to what everybody is looking for. I am curious on your thoughts, Megan, on Hugh Jackman's portrayal as Wolverine again, because you haven't had any frame of reference for this character, but he's played this role for 24 years now. And he's done it across. He's the only person to ever play the role. It's similar to how people feel about Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark, which is ironic now after the news we got at Comic-Con. But it's just that this is he's so synonymous with this character. And Kevin Feige has actually talked about in interviews. He's like, I can't foresee anybody else playing this character anytime in the near future. It has to be Hugh. Mm-hmm. So your first experience seeing Hugh Jackman as a comic accurate Wolverine, what was your takeaway from his performance?
It's great that you asked that because my exact words when I actually talked to my parents about it this morning and I was telling them about Deadpool and Wolverine, I was saying like, I thought Wolverine was going to be like a lot more badass. Like he was really goofy. Like they made him really goofy. They made him like a drunk. I was just like, I thought he was going to be cool. Like that's really what I was saying.
Yeah.
And you know, as it turns out, and now that I've kind of, cause Deadpool Wolverine is entirely the only thing I'm getting on like my Instagram feeds and for you pages is that they were trying to go in more of a direction of the original like a Wolverine in the comics and how he was in the comics. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Wolverine's character, he is a really grumpy guy. Like he is just always grumpy.
Yeah.
So that is, which I actually now like reading that and knowing more about that, I'm like, you know, actually like that's, I can't, you know, I kind of, I can appreciate that, you know, that they went in that direction. I thought he was a pleasure to watch. It just, like I said, I've seen the Deadpool movies. I had already an attachment to him. But like Wolverine, I didn't have that. So it was going to be like a test. Is this movie going to make me, you know, feel a certain way, or is it gonna, you know, have me feel more attached to his character? And like we were just saying before, I think it goes without saying, but to appeal to only the diehard fans is kind of that's not necessarily the way to go, like moving forward, I would say, because I mean, who, like, it's gonna get less people in the theater just in general. People aren't gonna go anymore if they don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
you know.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for, again, some of the references and certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, people are aware that he's played this character before, but not everybody has seen the X-Men films like they've seen the MCU movies. I mean, the at the time when Iron Man came out in 2008. They were like 3 years removed from the last X-Men movie, and then it took 3 years after Iron Man for them to return to X-Men. So they were in a weird holding pattern, and then people knew it wasn't connected, so they didn't really care to go back and watch them. And so there's always that aesthetic to it as well. Yeah. Michael, I know you did talk a little bit about the connective tissue of the two Reynolds and Jackman, but we had a conversation a while ago when we covered Loki about how Hiddleston is just so known to be that character, and one of the people we said is like on the Mount Rushmore of comic portrayals as Jackman as Wolverine. We have seen Logan. We know the stakes of what comes on the aftermath of what many people describe as a perfect comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
So having known that and coming off of Logan, what were your feelings going into this movie, and where your hesitancy is sort of lessened based on the output that we got from Sean Levy and this film overall?
So coming off, let me first start with Logan, just because I liked, for whatever reason, I never really thought of that. Like, I think that is an amazing film. I think it is one of the best portrayals of a superhero film just in general, but also just like the character of Wolverine is one of the best portrayals. I never really categorized it in like the like perfect realm. I always just thought it was like, this is a really good movie. And it's a good send off for Wolverine. So when they brought him in, I knew that was a good send off, but I also knew that like there was still so much that they could do with this character. Marvel hadn't even really touched it, and they just got the rights to it. So I knew in some degree we were going to see Wolverine again. I just had no idea
it was going to be Jackman.
Yeah, coming off of Logan, going now into this movie, and everything. I feel like they handled the Logan part of it all perfectly, to be honest. I know a lot of people online that are very upset. Because they feel like it has still tarnished that name. And I remember when they first announced that they were going to do this movie, Reynolds was like, we're not going to touch anything that had to do with Logan that took place in 2029 in that film. Like, we're good. And he's digging him up in the first 5 minutes of this movie. Yeah. And he actually says such a funny line. It's like right before you see the skeleton, he's like, oh yeah, no, you are very passed away. And you see the skeleton. So I don't know. I feel like he, in like a Deadpool nature, you knew he was still going to do something like that regardless. And it worked. Now going into Wolverine in this portrayal, I think that Hugh Jackman has furthermore cemented himself in the legacy that is like stapling himself as Wolverine, not only because of coming off of all of the different X-Men movies, the Wolverine movies that we've seen of him, everything. I feel like this allowed us to see that he can play multiple Wolverines. It's not just one Wolverine that we're getting. It's like, because yeah, you're right, this was like a drunk, goofy version, and they have kind of shown other versions of that where he can get really drunk in the past. But this was probably like the most pathetic version of Wolverine that we've seen on screen. And he still was able to provide so much to this character. You know what I'm saying? Like, for him to be like the worst Wolverine and still have so much heart and provide so much to the story and show how much you could still feel for Wolverine, for like all of them just being like a guy that is forced to live like throughout all this stuff, you know, it's very depressing when you think about it, but it's like, he's Wolverine and it's his life. So I don't know. I feel like he cemented himself even more in this film. And then to see the different variants of it too, of him too, I feel like that was just like even more of a nod to Hugh, and like to see a short version of Hugh, to see all these things, even to see like, I don't know, I guess this is more on the fan service, but having Henry Cavill appear, like, it has nothing to do with the cementing of Hugh Jackman, obviously. But just again, just bringing up the variations of Wolverine, just to be able to see that they could play into that with Hugh, it worked. So yeah. I think he's still a legend.
No, I agree. I think that he proved why this was a worthy way to bring back that character and for Hugh to come into the MCU, which is something that he's wanted to do for quite a long time. And he's had a connection with Feige because Feige was one of the people that helped cast him in the role 25 years ago, which was so unbelievable to just come full circle like that. So I do want to transition to something that I look at as, you can look at it as cons or just some of the other ancillary pieces of this movie that don't have to do with the title of the film. We have a villain in Cassandra Nova, played by Emma Corrin, and they are, they're an actor that they won an award for playing Princess Diana in The Crown, and that kind of leaped them into stardom. And Cassandra Nova, for the people that aren't aware, is the sister of Professor X, who's a major character in the X-Men comics. And then we also have the TVA, the role of Matthew McFadyen, who plays Mr. Paradox. And McFadyen also a multi-time Emmy winner now for his role as Tom Wamsgams in Succession on HBO. And this is his first big thing after Succession, and he joins the MCU as this character in the TVA. Reasons that I liked both of them and a lot of things I didn't necessarily love about them. I thought that Paradox was a character that some of the things were good that he did, and some of the things I just thought were a little corny, and it wasn't necessarily what I loved to see out of the TVA. And the whole TVA aspect of it, which I thought was going to be such a bigger piece of it, is really not essential in this movie. But Cassandra Nova, Emma Corrin, I think they do a great job of really showcasing their powers in such a way where it even at a time of where there's so much levity in this film, it's so real based on how powerful the character is, because Cassandra Nova is this character that is just, I mean, you're seeing body horror. Like, she's sticking her hands through people's eye sockets and through their mouths, and she's ripping the flesh off of Human Torch, like, with the snap of a finger. So I'm curious on, Megan, your thoughts on those two characters in general, and if you thought they added anything to the story, or if you think they could have gone an entire different direction, or maybe you didn't need them at all. What were your thoughts?
Cassandra Nova was overpowered, like scary. That's what I was thinking the whole time. Like, damn, like she really could rip them apart. And they're both just two like goofy characters. They're just acting like you're a doofus. They're just too like they're just being stupid, you know. And it's like she is so overpowered that the whole time I was just like, there's just no way. Like they you know, I know they're gonna survive, but like they totally shouldn't. You know, if this was realistic, she could destroy them, as we saw with Torch. She actually like that was horrific.
Yeah,
and, you know,
crazy visual.
True, yeah, being is that it's, you know, a rated R film. You know, they could do that, and they did that. I thought her powers were super cool. I don't know, like the fact that she like can. And that's the thing too, is it's not just a physical like thing. It's also she's threatening in such a way where she can get inside your head. Like it's a psychological like torture that she can just learn everything about them. Like that, she's not only physically capable of just like having them cease to exist in like a second, you know, and just making them explode, but she also can get inside their mind and manipulate them and learn everything that she needs to know just by just like, I don't even know, just fondling around in their brain. Like, I'm like, what? Yeah. So that was crazy. I found her very captivating. I thought that was a great performance by them. I forget the TVA guy.
McFadyen. Yeah. Playing Mr. Paradox.
Totally. He was dweeb. You know, like I was just like, there was a couple of times I can't really remember exactly what he would say, but he would just say something. I just cringed. I may have also just been the writing, and I feel like they tried to throw in a lot of like, 2024 lingo, like, you know, just kind of, I guess, to like kind of gravitate more towards their younger fans or just people. And I was just like, oh, I don't know. It just made me cringe. Like, he made me cringe. I thought like he was just really silly and he didn't really know what he was doing. And he was kind of being basically an asshole to Deadpool. And it just made me angry. And I think just the fact that everything is, like I said before, like it's just so, the TV, it's so confusing. There's so many moving parts, and you know, he's basically making it seem like the stakes are so high, but like it's just also like, are they? Like, you know, like why? Like, it's such a big deal to him and getting, you know, Deadpool like to not just be like a nobody. Like, okay, I'm you know, like again, it kind of feels like a plot device. Like, he was just kind of there to move things along, but it almost didn't feel necessary. He just kind of was like the you know, the person to be the head or the leader of, you know, the TVA and what was going on at the time, you know, during the movie. So it just kind of like, I could have done without him. Mm-hmm. I think that Cassandra Nova was, you know, that was the villain. That was like that was the reason for having this film. It wasn't just to, you know, debut these new characters. There was some kind of plot. There was some kind of threat involved, mm-hmm. and I think she was the threat. But yeah, Mr. Paradox, it was just kind of, I don't know. He just kind of bothered me.
Yeah.
To be honest,
Michael.
I personally feel like those two characters were probably my only two gripes with this mm-hmm. movie. I agree. I'm gonna start with Mr. Paradox. I agree completely. he just like wasn't funny to me. Every mm-hmm. time that like he had the slightest bit of comedic appeal, I feel like it was because Ryan Reynolds was next to him and was like supporting him, or it was like kind of like he would say something and Ryan would say something that kind of maybe made the interaction a little bit more funnier. Mm-hmm. I just never really got that comedic sort of presence from him. It never really struck on me. There are also just a few questions that I kind of had, knowing, again, coming off the background of watching a few other things, watching Loki, like, mm-hmm. and knowing that like obviously that's where the TVA was like introduced, and like luckily like we got that, so we knew about like a few of these characters in that environment. But like, where was homie throughout all of that? You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, not that they need to show Kasem, because I'm sure that the TVA is huge and there's so many working mm-hmm. parts, and he was just somewhere that probably just he came up at some point with everything now. But it was just weird that like he was just kind of brought up out of nowhere. After coming off of two seasons of fully just focusing on everything TVA with Loki, and then also again, like you said, he was really corny, so it just mm-hmm. didn't help matters. Yeah, that's all I really have to say. I really just was not a fan of his character. I think that to a degree, I guess I could see how it was needed, and it was needed to even just show that there are still sides of the TVA that are still like
we haven't even discovered yet. Yeah, we haven't even seen like that guy was doing what he was doing to receive a promotion.
Yeah,
like that was his yeah. whole device. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because if you think about how many universes and timelines there are, of course there's going to be so many divisions in the TVA, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And we kind of got it like a hint of that at the end of Loki season one, where it's like he's in a completely different what's it called timeline yeah. with like a never TVA. So I appreciate that, and I hope we maybe get to see a little bit more of the TVA, mm-hmm. you know, branched out with that, but not of his character. He's definitely keep him away. Going into Cassandra Nova, I really loved Cassandra Nova. I thought that they really killed the performance. My only gripe with Cassandra Nova is that I put Cassandra Nova in now this bracket of supervillains that Marvel seems to use that are just OD super powerful, mm-hmm. at least in the comics, and like they're presenting them as being really powerful, but they're using them in like a one-off situation.
Let me guess. The other person you're thinking of is Gore the God Butcher.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And that's not the only there's I could probably
there's
of,
multiple.
Yes,
but.
more that they plan to use in the future. Like I love Galactus, and that's the villain for Fantastic Four. I know that he's a little bit bigger than like at times that he might end up being. And that's the future. So I'm not even really gonna get into that. But it's just been a run, and we saw even how Kang played out. Obviously, that was for things outside the universe and everything like that, but like they keep kind of bringing these like super super powerful super villains, and then it's like let's take her for example, Cassandra. Like she and like you hit it on the nail. She could have any point like just knocked them off. Like mm-hmm. she was so powerful, but like she had a heart. And like, not to say that that was like a bad thing, but that's what ultimately like was like her vulnerability throughout it. And just like, because of her heart, she like was like, ah, you know what? Like, I can understand. Go on. Like, it's fine. You guys are okay.
Mm. After like you said, after like all up in their face.
Essentially like, saving her for a millisecond gives her the levity to release these guys through the sling ring. It's convenient. It's a little convenient.
Yeah,
too exactly. convenient. Way too convenient. I'll leave it there, but I'm just
No, I agree. Like again, I was upset by Paradox, especially because I love McFadden as an actor, and he's my favorite character for Succession. So that was upsetting, and like I wish that if he was coming into the MCU, he would be playing a different character because I want to see more of him in the MCU, not the character in the MCU. This is my first performance I've ever seen of Emma Corrin's, and I thought that they did a great job in the role as Nova. I really think that they and it's funny how you even get the reveal where it kind of looks like it's Charles from the back and they're calling him Chuck and they're like, oh my God, it's Chuck. Like Deadpool's like so excited to see Professor X and it's obviously his sister. But no, I agree. I think that there's something to say with this movie, and my biggest gripe with it is the conveniences and certain things that fall into place. And the only reason we can look past a lot of it in this movie is because of how much fun you have with this movie. Like you're going to have a good time watching this movie, regardless whether you understand all the references like Michael and myself, or you don't understand any of the references like Megan. Like there's aspects of it that you're still going to have fun with. Even things like Peter as a character, Rob Delaney's character, like you don't even need to see the first two Deadpool movies to realize how ridiculous all of it is. Like that character in general, and how you get that huge sequence towards the end of the film with the Deadpool army, or the Deadpool Corps, I believe they're called in the comics. And they have the whole sequence where they have the tracking one shot of them killing all the different Deadpools. And then they all come back to life and you think that they're going to take out Deadpool and Wolverine. And then all of a sudden Peter shows up and they're like, oh, look, it's Peter. And it becomes a whole play on it. But I do think that that's a part of the problem with this movie. And it's why when we eventually get the scores, like this is not a perfect movie. It's not. There's a lot of things in this film, especially if you're an MCU fan, that you can look at it and you can be like, they had an opportunity to do something a little bit more with this. They had an opportunity to do something a little bit different with this. But as Michael said, and I totally echo his sentiment and what he was saying, it's a send off to all those people in the Fox universe. And you see it even in the post credit when the credit, well, not even the post credit, the credit scene where the credits are rolling, they have this really beautiful montage of behind the scenes videos and images from all of the films that came before this, including Elektra and Blade and the X-Men films and all this stuff. So there's a lot to really like about this movie. There are obviously some things, I mean, as we've stated, there's things we don't necessarily like about this movie. I am curious, favorite jokes of the film, because there's so many things to laugh at. Megan, I'll go to you last if you need to think about it. I know mine, we talked a little bit off camera. My favorite is the one you brought up slightly, but when he's traveling through the universes and he gets to his first universe and he goes, come on, Logan, come on over here. It's time to bring you back to my Earth. And he turns around and it's like a very, 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 very tiny version of Wolverine that's comic accurate. He's like 4'11" and he hops off the bar stool. He's like, come on, you hunk of hair, get on over here. And it's like, that's great because it plays on the intricacies of the comics. And what it's so funny because so many comic book fans for years when Hugh Jackman was cast as a 6'4" male, we're like, that's not my Wolverine. He's too tall to be Wolverine. It's like, well, did you want somebody to look like that? Because that looks ridiculous on screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was my favorite part. I know what yours is, Michael, but definitely let it rip for the audience.
I actually know like a solid like two actually that I could bring up just because this movie was so funny. Oh my gosh. So yeah, I had already brought up the one. I adored the Loki callback joke when he said, oh, from Loki season 1 episode 5. Another one that really was just so low-key that killed me was in that Honda car fight right before they start fighting. He slams, I don't remember who slams whose head into the radio, and the first song that comes on is like the title track from The Greatest Showman. And it's just like such like a stupid little thing that's so funny to me. Oh yeah, that was so funny. And then another one really quick was just I actually rewatched this the whole after credit scene. I've grown to really appreciate a lot more. Just coming off of, again, the whole cap and like the no swearing and having that. But also, if you just watch Deadpool and rewatch that, if you ever see it come up on your phone, watch it again and just watch Deadpool how he adds, because he's like go ahead, I'm listening. Yeah. And then like at the end, like he says it and you can quote me on that, and he goes okay, like he just like like I don't know, something about it is just so Deadpool, but also to play into like the whole cap side of it and like knowing the whole profanity joke, it was that was a really funny little callback.
So yeah, I enjoyed for sure. Megan, favorite joke from the film?
I forget what his name was, but Deadpool that couldn't regenerate. He had the beautiful hair and the dog.
Oh, Cool Pool.
Cool Pool.
Yeah, yeah. Nice Pool. Nice Pool.
Nice Pool made me laugh because every time, like, that was something, actually, the dog I thought may have been in the other movies or something because of how, like, Deadpool was always like...
It was a major part of emphasis in the movie, yeah. Not in the previous films, but in this movie. Dogpool, yes.
Yeah, so it almost made me think, like, is this a reference I don't get? Because he was so in love with that dog. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was funny, but also just the fact that he told... Like, the scene with all the Deadpools, and he decides to grab Nicepool and just, like, use him as, like, a human shield. And then he's like, you're gonna be fine, like... You're gonna regenerate. And he was just like, what? And as he's like bleeding out his mouth, like he's got shot like 17 times. Like that was pretty funny to me. And the proposal reference when like Nicepool looks at the camera. Great. The proposal.
And he calls him because he makes a Van Wilder joke. And then he goes, oh, I could do fourth wall breaks too. And then he goes, the proposal. And then just turns back to him and he goes, what was that? It's so good. It's a great that's a great callback, because I forgot about the proposal joke, but that is a really good one.
I laughed really loud.
There's so many funny jokes in this film. Just going back to some other cameos too that we didn't even mention. In the Deadpool core, there's a bunch of different versions of Deadpool. Some that Megan just alluded to with Nicepool and Dogpool. we have Lady Deadpool, who comes out and it is voiced by Ryan Reynolds' wife, Blake Lively. That was confirmed later. You were right on that, Michael. I thought it was Taylor Swift, but you were right. It was Blake Lively. And then Cowboy Deadpool is voiced by Matthew McConaughey, which is a fun little thing. Cool that he would come into the MCU in some capacity. So those are always fun. I mean, again, the cameos are in abundance in this film. I mean, you also get a lot of C-list X-Men characters that return from all the previous movies. You get Azazel from X-Men First Class. You get Toad from X-Men. You get Pyro from the X-Men films. You get so many references, so many meta things.
Sabretooth
from the first X-Men, and that's always great when Deadpool holds up his head and says, Furiosa, bring me your worst. Like, there's so many great references. There's so much to cover with the film. We've already covered it now for quite a while. I want to transition quickly before we go into scores about things in the overall MCU and what this could mean. Because for people who, hopefully if you're watching this still, because it's a spoiler heavy thing at this point, you're a big fan of the MCU. And we're in this era, this saga with the multiverse, in which we're getting all these big incursion events, all these big things that are happening in different Earths and different universes that are going to have a main... problem sort of breaking apart and creating these rifts that are going to be used to be for maybe for something for Kang to deal with, but now we're going to get Dr. Doom eventually in Avengers 5 and 6. This whole movie is a ginormous incursion event. It's a huge battle happening in the void. All of these people escape the void through Cassandra Nova opening it up with the sling ring, and we see all that play out. Do you think there's anything we're going to get out of this that plays a major effect going forward? Especially because, I mean, we're going to have to see Deadpool return probably by the end of this phase, right? So, Michael, I'll start with you, and then Megan, we'll go to you and any theories you may have or thoughts.
Sure.
Yeah. So coming out of this film, I definitely think that, I think that everything that Marvel has done, despite the failures, and I can say failures, unfortunately, I do think everything has been so intentional. So, like, I remember way back when we were covering X-Men 97, and like we were showcasing a lot of those characters, I remember being like, you know what? I feel like they're doing this right now because who knows? Maybe we might see a Gambit or something, or maybe we might see like the live action characters coming soon in the X-Men film or in Deadpool or something like that. And like we got Gambit in this film, and it was strategically after they released a project showcasing those characters for people who might not know them. So I do think that now that they are starting to play a lot more into these other films, X-Men related, and coming off of the other films we've seen too, where like a lot of the X-Men in the previous X-Men have appeared, the Kelsey Grammer scene in the Marvels and all these this stuff like this, I do feel like this was, again, not only just a send-off, but an introduction for the X-Men, and they're really going to start to bring them in. That's just one side of it. I do think that moving forward, this means even outside of the movies themselves, I do think that this is just, again, like you said, the introduction of just being able to have more R-rated content in the midst of it all. I do know that there's a lot more dark, gritty characters that they plan to bring in, and this kind of confirmed that they can do that and maybe even have them be in their own little sort of branch. We talked about like the Midnight Suns eventually, if that is, which I don't know if you're familiar, there's another sort of like Punisher, like a Daredevil,
Blade.
And so they could still, there's options now you can see with them incorporating these groups and like what they're doing and then trying out like being experimental. You could see what they're trying to do. But then even just with Deadpool, I feel like now this has fully like obviously brought Deadpool into the midst of it so much to the point where there were cameos that like were honestly still important that we aren't even really covering. Like the fact you saw a glimpse of Hulk. And it, you know, like you saw there, and this has been trending everywhere since we've seen the movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone keeps going, why was Thor crying? Why was Thor crying? Yeah. There's a whole scene, you know, in the film where it's like, he's like, why is Thor over me crying? And it could just be like a funny callback to like an old moment of when Thor's standing over a Loki and it just happens to be Deadpool there. Or Marvel could be really funny and it could be something from Secret Wars. And it could be something where like, oh snap, like Deadpool is just like pulling Thor's leg in the future knowing that he could die and he's just milking it, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they laid some breadcrumbs to the point of like, oh no, you'll see Deadpool again. Like, we don't know exactly how, but like don't worry, like he'll be back somehow. They just probably don't have no idea right now.
There's a lot of theory baiting. Yeah. Like there definitely is in this movie. But Megan, what are your thoughts?
Those are some great thoughts. Like the fact that until Marvel bought Fox, right, they stretched out any characters they could. And like once they were done with the Avengers, like once Endgame came out, like they haven't had the high since Endgame like that. Mm-hmm. And they've been trying to find their footing again, because it really, it's hard to beat that it really is. So like, you just, you know, with all of the different like diversions, all the shows about certain characters, like it was going strong for a while, but you know, eventually really movie after movie was kind of just starting to flop, and some of the shows even too, just about characters that especially people that are more casual fans that people just don't care about. Mm-hmm. You know, like people care about Iron Man and Captain America, obviously, like that's, you know, like everyone knows who those superheroes are, but you get to a point where you're losing a lot of, you know, viewers if no one really knows who these characters are, no one has attachments to them, not everyone will read the comics. It's like now that they finally have the X-Men and they have Deadpool and Wolverine, like I just don't want them to mess it up, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's so much opportunity. It is very exciting. There's so much opportunity here. And I think this movie, like we've been saying, is literally just like a setup. Like here, like, all right, like here we go. Like we can take this in so many directions. Now we have these characters and here's what we may or may not do. Mm-hmm. I think Deadpool being in an environment with the Avengers is like that. Like you were saying earlier, Darian, like that is an interesting, you know, how is he gonna interact in a PG-13 environment? Like that really is like kind of a, like we really don't know. They could mess that up. There's a lot of different points where, you know, it could flop, and I really don't want it to flop. You know, I really want it to be exciting again. They can have these standalone X-Men films if they really wanted to, and just these like own like storylines that are just like, they're in their, you know, like they're staying in their lane. It's hard now because we have the multiverse, and they're probably going to do like they could do so much with that. Like there's not really a clear like end in sight. It's just kind of like, you know, I really hope that you guys don't mess it up. That's really all I'm thinking right now.
No, I totally get that. And I think the biggest thing with this is going to be, this is an introduction of Deadpool to people that have no idea and maybe just watch the MCU films. Like they have no idea who this character is, and that might be jarring. Like for some people, it's like, oh my God, this guy just made a ton of sexual innuendos for the last 2 hours. Yeah. And I just sit here and hear all that and reference about how it's not the first time he's been pegged and how many times he's going to do cocaine with Blind Al. Like there's so many things that are in this movie that you wouldn't expect out of a Disney film. Mm-hmm. I do think that, like Michael said, though, I'm starting to believe that everything is happening for a reason, or at least maybe in the last couple of projects, they're starting to transition that in a certain way. Mm-hmm. We got the reveal at Comic-Con that Robert Downey Jr. is going to be playing a Dr. Doom. We don't know if he's going to be a variant of Tony Stark or if he's going to be playing an entirely different character as Victor Von Doom, but that's going to be essential going forward. Like you brought up, Megan, these Fox characters in the comics are huge. Like the X-Men are a massive property, and the Fantastic Four is Marvel's first family. Like there's so much to that it's going to go along. And I think that this is a fun way to introduce these characters into this world. But I am curious because so much of this movie takes place on Earth 10005, I think it is. And the MCU proper is Earth 616, but we're going to see more of these characters taking place in different universes. And we see it a little bit in Multiverse of Madness, and we see it in Loki, and we're going to see it in Fantastic Four for Steps. So there's a lot still to be revealed. It's kind of crazy to say that when it's like we're a year and a half away from Avengers 5, you know, like there's still so much to sort of happen and watching and waiting for the shoe to drop that I'm just excited to kind of see what happens. And I was very happy with the end result of what this movie provided me in the theater. And I know you guys feel the same way. So I think it's probably a good time to transition to scores. We've talked about this movie at length now for probably, if not over an hour, close to an hour. So you want me to go? I should go first. Should I go first? I'll go first.
Do it.
So there's a lot to love about this movie. There's a lot of really great, as we said, cameos, jokes. Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool is another just... I can't put him in the Mount Rushmore category because there's just better portrayals, but at the same time, he's perfect in this role. And I think I just want to see more with Deadpool. I want to see him in the MCU. I want to see him interact with other heroes. I want to see him interact with the Punisher. I want to see him interact with Daredevil and Spider-Man. And, so badly. But this is not a perfect movie. It's one of my favorite Marvel movies in recent memory. I would even say it's probably not even my favorite movie from the saga. I still really, really, really love Guardians 3. I really, really do. And Spider-Man No Way Home, it doesn't grow with value the more I watch it. It is very nostalgia-based, and there's so much in that. But it does progress the MCU in a way, and it explains a lot more. And it was very cool to see the three Spider-Men sort of combine on screen, and Spider-Man's always been my favorite Marvel character. So it's hard to put it above that, but I still think this is a really great movie, and I'm sticking with my 0.5s or total scores. So I'm going to go with an 8.5 for Deadpool and Wolverine. Is Deadpool? Yeah, Deadpool and Wolverine. Not Deadpool versus Wolverine. Yeah. Deadpool and Wolverine. Really, really great movie. Highly recommend it to everybody. You should go see it in a theater. 8.5. If I had to go in between, it's probably between an 8.5 and a 9. So, okay. Megan, your score.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting. I approve. I do want to say real quick that being we're kind of getting into the future of Marvel here and like what's to come, there's hope right now and a lot of potential with X-Men and Wolverine, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four, like you were saying. But there's also hope with Spider-Man. They opened that up for that to be something really great. So that's another thing that I just want to say. Hope they don't mess that up either. So just need to throw that in there. Overall, though, I had a great time with this movie, despite the few gripes that I had with it. It was a great time. I was actually excited to see a Marvel movie in theaters, and it felt like a long time since I had that feeling, and also a long time since I had the feeling where everyone actually stays in their seats during the credits and like waits for the post-credit scene. I felt so good that was finally happening again. I was like, wow, like it's really been too long. It was very refreshing. So that being said, there's hope and there's excitement for the future. of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think for that, I would probably give this movie a
7.9. Okay.
Yeah.
Michael, your score.
Wow. So I'm definitely coming at this still from like a very, very, very fan centric, if that's the right word. I don't even know if that's how you say. From a fan point of view, where coming off of just like, again, knowing a lot of that background knowledge and seeing a lot of that, being so much more in, like, I guess, excited in that sort of hype of it all. Mm. I will say that I feel like Deadpool and Wolverine is a beautiful mix of what what I thought No Way Home was gonna be. Mm. What I thought Multiverse of Madness was going to be, all while still making it a Deadpool film. There were things with like No Way Home I appreciated more, just because, again, I'm a Spider-Man guy at heart. I just felt like this, they were able to encompass everything that they've been saying we were going to see in multiple projects in the past, which is not an easy thing, while still doing that fan service, well, like due diligence. And so I feel like there's another thing I was going to say based off of what you had said. That kind of made me relook at things, but call me crazy. Call me a little crazy, guys. I don't know. I'm going to give this movie a 9.
Okay. I think it's fair. I think I totally understand where a 9 would come from. You're not necessarily in the minority. I think that there's a lot of people that really, really love this movie and feel that the faith in the MCU was back again, which there's at least a little bit of a glimmer from all of us that that is a feeling that we get by the end of this movie. I just think that there are certain things, and it's hard because like Marvel movies are different than anything else, right? They have to interconnect. They have to have this other thing. You have something?
I remember what I was
going to say. Go ahead.
I do remember. To your point, as far as Hugh Jackman like cementing himself for this character, I feel like maybe one more movie might do it, but at the same time, I feel like he has. I feel like this movie somehow cemented him. Maybe not on like a Mount Rushmore.
Ryan Reynolds like as Ryan Deadpool Reynolds you're talking about.
Maybe not like a Mount Rushmore, but like in true Deadpool style, maybe if he like built a face on like where their asses are sort of thing. Like that's, I feel like he's up there. He's just like not up there yet.
He can never be on that level.
He might like, we might still see that at some point, but I just feel like it's still too early, but at the same time I feel like in the three movies that we've seen him, like there's no one else I could see play that character at all.
I think it's
like,
fair.
I feel like he's like, I'm telling you, he's the ass of Mount Rushmore right now. That's the best way I could describe it.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yes.
Well, it really is. That was fun, guys. We just talked for quite a long time about Deadpool and Wolverine. If you guys stuck around this whole time, obviously you guys saw the movie as well. So let us know in the comments your overall thoughts. What was your favorite cameo in the movie? What was your favorite joke in the movie? What are you looking forward to with Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool and maybe Hugh Jackman's Wolverine joining the MCU proper and seeing what's going to happen going forward? Be sure to give this video a like if you can. And also please subscribe to us. We have the Culture Wave Media Network. We cover all things film and TV. We also have our Comic-Con Marvel reaction coming out. We are going to have our Twisters review coming. We're still covering House of the Dragon, Batman Caped Crusader. Vinny and I are going to be covering soon. We have the Penguin coming in September. A lot of other things coming. The Umbrella Academy, Trap, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. Lots of things that we're going to be talking about. So please be sure to tune into that as well. You guys can also follow us on social media. If you don't, support us there. We're at Cinema Wave Media and at _ Culture Wave Media on Instagram, as well as at Cinema Wave Media on TikTok and Threads, and then just Culture Wave on Facebook. Signing off, I am Darian Scalamoni.
I am Megan Krantz.
I'm Mikey Peniston.
And we'll see you guys next time.
This is The Culture.